Welcome to Hometown California, a production of the Rural County Representatives of California, advocating for California's rural counties for nearly 50 years. Hometown California tells the rural story through the eyes of those who live, work, and play in the rural communities of the Golden State. This is Hometown California. I'm your host, Paul Smith. Joining me today is Jim Augsbury, Executive Director of the Western Governors Association. Jim, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So we're going to talk about the Western Governors Association, what you do, how you're staffed, how you're organized, all of those things. But let's go ahead and just kick that off. What is the Western Governors Association? I doubt many of our listeners frequently know the work you do, although it is very important. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what the association is and perhaps how it intersects with RCRC.
Of course. So the Western Governors Association is an organization that represents the governors of the 22 westernmost states and territories. So that is a footprint that is composed of the Western United States from Nebraska down to Texas and everything west of that. We are largely an instrument for bipartisan policy development, information exchange, and collective action on mutual interests to the Western United States and Western governors.
So just to be clear for our listeners, obviously California's governor, Governor Gavin Newsom, is a member of WGA. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right.
So he's joining his 21 other colleagues as chief executives in developing these policies and trying to, as you said, move the needle, particularly in the federal world. Maybe tell us a little bit about what you did before coming to WGA and what you do now on a daily basis with respect to the person who would lead an organization of 22 elected governors.
I was born and raised in Arizona, went to law school at Arizona State and somehow took a wrong turn and ended up in Washington, D.C., and I didn't find the escape hatch for about 18 years. But I worked in D.C. in a variety of capacities, both on and off Capitol Hill, spent a number of years as the clerk and staff director of the Energy and Water Subcommittee of the House Appropriations Committee, and then repatriated back to the West and ended up in Arizona, where I was serving as the legislative director of the Arizona League of Cities and Towns before being hired by the governors in 2012 to become the executive director of the Western Governors Association. And in terms of the day-to-day, one thing is certain, there is no typical day, no such thing as a typical day around this joint. We are a member association, and we do those things that associations do. We do communications, we do meetings, we do publications, but we are mostly a policy development and advocacy organization. And I've got a small but very, very mighty policy team that's swinging above its weight right now. And the policies that we pursue are memorialized in policy resolutions that are duly adopted by the governors. And those resolutions kind of define our work plans and our, you know, work on a day-to-day basis. So, and we're very opportunistic. So once we have a gubernatorial policy that is in place, we will seek to build coalitions or testify before Congress or comment on rulemakings that are being pursued by federal agencies. And it's in that context that we have developed, I think, a really warm and beneficial and mutually productive relationship with RCRC and other county organizations that share so many of the issues that are of greatest importance to the governors.
Yeah, and full disclosure to our listeners, RCRC is connected with WGA. I don't know if we consider ourselves members, but clearly we have a relationship both in policy expertise as well as sharing and perhaps commenting on a lot of the things that are going on. So you're based in Denver, Colorado, I understand?
We are based in Denver. We are the only governor's association, to my knowledge, that is not based in Washington, D.C., whether partisan or bipartisan or regional or national. We're the only ones that are outside the Beltway. And I think the governors deliberately kind of planted the flag in the heart of the Rocky Mountain Empire as a statement that we are really by the West and for the West and of the West. And we've been here in Denver since the founding of the association in 1984. The organization was formed by the merger of two policy organizations, governor policy offices, that both did work in the gubernatorial policy space. Western governors have been getting together for well over 100 years, but the birth of WGA dates back to 84.
So you've got a diverse group of people, both ideological and geographical. You have a number of those territories in the Pacific, the far Pacific, who are active in your association. How do you get to reach a policy goal and a policy resolution with such a diverse group of people, men, women, far-flung areas of territory, for lack of a better term, in the U.S., large ideological gaps? How do you make that work?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And you're right. My membership is extremely diverse and very politically diverse. And I think what really is the binding agent of the governors is their commitment to bipartisanship, their pragmatism, their executive inclination to compromise and make things happen. But the other binding agent is a commitment to state authority. And I will tell you, when I was the first policy issue that I was airdropped into when I started in 2012 had to do with endangered species and potential reform of the Endangered Species Act. And I had just come from watching a lot of battles in Capitol Hill over endangered species. And I would say that was an issue that was anything but bipartisan. But what the governors represented was that if we can't take this on and come up with some rational solutions, then who can? But I was still skeptical, and I thought, wow, maybe we should take on something a little bit easier, like peace in the Middle East. But then I watched this policy process unfold, and the governors went through 19 versions of a policy resolution on endangered species and ESA. And I would have thought that that resolution would be very washed out, very vanilla after 19 versions and wouldn't say much. But in fact, I thought it was a very strong resolution, and it was strong on that dimension of state authority, that it called for states to be full and equal partners in the implementation of the Endangered Species Act. It recognized that states have data and science and analysis that should be brought to bear in ESA listing decisions. It recognized the competence of states to develop their own conservation plans. And I would say, Paul, that that really is the thread that runs throughout many of our resolutions, is this commitment to state authority, this recognition that the states really want to act as true partners with the federal government, that states are sovereigns, they're not stakeholders, and they have, and governors in particular, who have particularized knowledge of their own states' economies and environments and cultures and politics and legal systems, that knowledge should be brought to bear in these federal decisions that impact state authority and affect state equities.
So staying kind of on the governance side for just a little bit, and then we'll get into some of the policy aspects of your work. You have a chair, you alluded to Governor Kate Brown of Oregon is the current chair. How are chairs selected? Are they rotated around the membership, or are they elected by their peers? What constitutes that high leadership within the association?
They are elected by their peers, and they serve for a one-year term, and it is quite an honor to be recognized by the governors of the West to serve in this leadership capacity. They are initially elected as vice chair. They serve in the role as vice chair for 1 year, and then are typically elevated by their peers to the position of chair for the ensuing year, and then remain as part of the leadership and executive committee as the immediate past chair. So once a governor enters the leadership queue of WGA, they're making a substantial commitment, and they're part of that leadership for 3 years.
And what is the work that Governor Brown and perhaps the leadership of WGA are doing? What are your top priorities through her term and through basically the senior leadership over the next several years?
Right now, we have policy resolutions. I'd suspect that we've got about 30 policy resolutions at any one time. And those represent the priorities of Western governors. And we don't rank those priorities. They don't say, well, this resolution is more important than another. So that's where we need to kind of be opportunistic and weigh in whenever there's an opportunity, because most of these are federal facing resolutions. In terms of some of the things that we're working on right now, a lot of the energy of WEJ's policy work is derived from chair initiatives. As chair of WEJA, and this is a bit of an inducement to leadership, the chair has the opportunity to commit a substantial measure of our resources to a particular interest or topic or initiative. And Governor Brown's is fascinating because her initiative is to create an electric vehicles roadmap for the West. And one of the prospective deliverables of this effort is an agreement among Western states on charging infrastructure that will really kind of help facilitate greater deployment of electric vehicles across the West. The initiative of Governor Burgum, Doug Burgum is the governor of North Dakota. He's our immediate past chair. He had a sprawling initiative called Reimagining the Rural West that was focused on the pillars of economic opportunity and connectivity and community. And some of the deliverables of that initiative found their way into a WGA policy on issues like broadband and community development. And Governor Little of Idaho, he's going to be looking very closely at forest and rangeland management issues in an initiative called Working Lands, Working Communities. So I think that illustrates there's a great consonance of interest between governors and counties on a number of these issues.
A lot of those intersect exactly what RCRC works on, what a lot of the county organizations in the West deal with on a day-to-day basis, both from an association and management, as well as just a government response to what constituents care about here in the West, particularly rural California, but, you know, obviously the expanse of vast lands that comprise Western states.
Western governors a few years ago established a platform for their work in the resources area called the Working Lands Roundtable. And this has been a really effective way, not only to organize our work in the resource space, but to acquire the expertise and the recommendations and kind of leverage the specialized knowledge of stakeholders and experts and elected officials through a series of roundtables, webinars, podcasts. And this is a place where the governors have really relied on groups like RCRC and other county organizations to help first examine these issues in depth and then to develop recommendations and inform their policy pronouncements on issues that affect the West.
Yeah, it's so important that we kind of stay together, if you will, between county governments, state governments, to really move the needle, as you said. Let's come back to that notion of trying to address Congress, address the federal government. Where do you think the successes have been in the last few years with respect to counties and states, particularly in the West, particularly those that have vast holdings of federal lands within their borders? How do you think we're doing, and what successes have you seen occur in recent years?
The first thing that comes to mind has to do with forest and rangeland management. Governor Bullock of Montana, when he was chair, this is the former governor of Montana, his initiative was the Western Governor's National Forest and Rangeland Management Initiative. And one of the products of that effort was a suite of 48 recommendations, both legislative and administrative, to improve the management of public land regimes. And a great number of those recommendations were both adopted on a regulatory basis, but also enacted into law by Congress. And probably the most prominent success had to do with the end of fire borrowing, which was a practice whereby the Department of Agriculture and other fire management agencies were depleting accounts that would help prevent fires to suppress fires. By the end of that practice, we should have much greater access the federal resources to manage fire, both in terms of prevention and suppression in years to come. Another success, I talked earlier about endangered species, the former governor of Wyoming, Matt Mead, his initiative was the Western Governor's Species Conservation and Endangered Species Act initiative. Similarly, that produced specific legislative and statutory recommendations. Many of the legislative recommendations have found their way into bills that are still pending in Congress, but the Fish and Wildlife Service adopted a number of the recommendations administratively. And these were all very kind of in the weeds recommendations that are intended to make the act work more effectively, work more efficiently, both for wildlife and the economies that depend on resource-dependent economies.
Yeah, back on the fire thing, that was a very important victory about 3 or 4 years ago. I know you guys worked on it extensively. County organizations did as well. So clearly, we have moved the needle with that in persuading Congress and obviously at the time, the Trump administration to address the budgetary needs and ultimately the fire needs of its federal management agencies. Where do you think, from a policy perspective, we still need to make some big improvements, both at the state executive level, but also the local government level of Western states?
Well, you know, I spent some time talking about the Working Lands Roundtable. WGA recently launched a platform for its work in socioeconomic issues called the Western Prosperity Roundtable. And we had three governors who addressed a forum of experts and stakeholders on prosperity issues. I think that we have some pretty meaty resolutions with respect to healthcare and rural broadband and cybersecurity that are going to demand a lot of our attention in years to come. And that's one thing to point out about these policy resolutions. One of the things that I hear from Western governors that they appreciate about WGA is that the resolutions that are produced are not simple feel-good statements. They're very substantive. They're very detailed. They include specific recommendations for federal action and otherwise. And they don't just represent a statement of principle. They really represent work plans. So once that resolution is adopted, the staff at WGA is expected to work with the states to implement the policies that are embedded in those resolutions. So they've been really active lately, and we definitely have our work cut out for us.
So you've been doing a lot of this work over the last 18 months in the COVID dynamic. How have you been managing that, and what does it mean for the second half of 2021 and going into 2022? Are you still trying to recover from what was lost, or were you able to be so nimble that you didn't really have a lot of the frustrations a lot of others did in the policymaking world? How's that been for WGA and its long-term policy goals?
So I can't say that it hasn't been frustrating, and of course the pandemic has affected us all profoundly in different ways. I would say I was stunned that the governors who were absolutely and remain at the tip of the spear on COVID-19 response and are making some of the most difficult decisions of their lives, that they still found time to reach across state lines and party lines and contribute their leadership to WGA. I found that my staff, we've been working remotely for this last year plus, and they really haven't missed a beat. You know, they've worked very productively and effectively remotely, but I think WGA staff, like the governors themselves, are now very ready to get back together and roll up their sleeves and meet in person and continue to build on the trust relationships that they have. And so it's a really exciting time for WGA. And despite everything that they've gone through over the last year and a half, their optimism remains unbridled. Their energy is astounding. And it's such a privilege to work for them. And that's the other thing. You would think they were singularly focused on COVID-19, but their other responsibilities didn't magically disappear. They still have state budgets to balance. They still have emergency situations and natural disasters that they have to manage. And their legislatures are still meeting and producing legislation for their consideration. So I don't envy anybody the position of governor over these last couple of years. It has been overwhelming, but I couldn't be more appreciative that they've taken on the responsibilities of governance and of leadership and have done so with such grace and effectiveness, and that they've continued to work together at WGA is kind of a testament to their collaborative nature. And I have no doubt that we're going to emerge from this pandemic more united and stronger than ever.
So, Jim, it sounds like there's a lot going on at WGA, both the way you're governed, the energy levels, the policy discussions. How does one get more familiar with WGA other than calling RCRC and saying, hey, that was a great podcast, I need to learn more? If you want to just take it upon your own, how do you get in touch with yourselves and your team to delve into many of these policy conversations that we here in California at the rural county level deal with?
Well, first of all, we have a very informative and robust website at westgov.org, and you'll find all of the policy resolutions there. You'll find kind of a summary of all of our activity surrounding those. We also do a number of podcasts and webinars on these various issues that you can visit at the website and download. Also, we have a number of opportunities, and again, you can sign up for our newsletter as well. You can do that at westgov.org. But we get have opportunities not only where you can learn what we're doing, but how you can contribute to the kind of policy development process. And that is through these platforms, the Working Lands Roundtable, the Western Prosperity Roundtable. We have virtual meetings, we have webinars, we have in-person meetings. We also have workshops that we will be pursuing for the initiatives of the chairs. So there are plenty of ways to get involved, to intersect with the governors. And I'd also mention that we have the governors meet several times a year. A couple of the large meetings are the winter meeting and the annual meeting. Our annual meeting will be virtual this year, but our winter meeting is going to be December 9th and 10th at the Lowe's Coronado in beautiful Coronado, California, and we hope to see many of your listeners there. They don't need to be invited. They don't need to be a sponsor of WGA. They just need to be a friend of the West and have a credit card that works.
Ah, there you go. Well, we really appreciate the time. I think our listeners will understand that there is a lot of value in the partnerships that WGA has with groups like RCRC and, of course, NACO. And it's good to see that we're tackling some of these issues like broadband, deployment, fire, forestry, land management, healthcare, all of these things together with the partnership of state executives. So thanks so much for shedding some light on that today and really appreciate your time.
Well, Paul, thank you. And thanks to RCRC that has been such a valuable partner and such a great supporter of Western Governors. And we're looking forward to continuing that partnership in the future. In the meantime, I'll just wish happy trails to you and your listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jim. Thanks to WGA for all the work they do. You've been listening to Hometown California, a production of the Rural County Representatives of California. Subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and be sure to rate and review this podcast. I'm your host, Paul Smith, and thanks for listening.